You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Deanna Lee.
And I'm Evan Banks. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's April 5th.
Gaza faces an increasingly dire humanitarian crisis. Some 80% of the population has been displaced. Food, medicine, and shelter are all in short supply. And the United Nations estimates that some 576,000 people are on the brink of famine. As if the situation weren't bad enough, some aid organizations have halted operations in Gaza this week after Israeli airstrikes killed 7 workers from the World Central Kitchen. Yesterday, on a reportedly tense call about the attack on World Central Kitchen and the plight of people in Gaza, President Joe Biden successfully pressured Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to open a new route for humanitarian aid to enter the enclave. Providing aid to Gaza has been an enormous challenge since the war began. The United States and other countries have been turning to creative measures, including airdrops and floating piers off the Gazan coast. But the problem isn't just getting aid into Gaza, says RAND's Raphael Cohen. It's delivering that aid to those who need it most. And this problem, the distribution problem, may be the most difficult one to solve. On this matter, Israel alleges that Hamas operatives have attacked aid convoys and stolen food from them. But beyond the degree of direct Hamas involvement, desperate Gazan civilians have rushed aid convoys, ransacked warehouses, and even stormed private houses to get to airdropped packages. None of this should be surprising, given their dire situation. But the lack of security in Gaza impedes humanitarian aid in other ways as well. The sheer physics of parachuting aid out of moving airplanes means that aid packages stand a high chance of being diverted, especially if the drop zones are not secured on the ground. And many facilities that store aid for distribution have been damaged or destroyed in the fighting. So, without law and order in Gaza, getting aid to the most vulnerable will remain a challenge, even if there is an increase in the amount of aid that enters the enclave. Currently, the international community has only bad options when it comes to solving this problem, Cohen says, including bringing in an external peacekeeping force, accepting a temporary Israeli reoccupation, or doing nothing at all and letting aid fall into the hands of a variety of nefarious actors. None of these options have particularly appealing outcomes, but it is clear that the status quo, trucks, roads, and floating piers, isn't enough.
Firearm death rates have been rising in the United States in the past few years, reversing a trend of declining deaths since a peak in the mid-1990s. Firearm suicide rates reached their lowest point in the mid-2000s and have been rising almost every year since then. Firearm homicide rates reached their lowest point in 2014, but have since risen rapidly. And by 2023, firearm homicide rates were higher than they have been for almost 30 years. A new RAND tool allows you to explore the data behind this grim trend by selecting your state to see how rates of gun deaths have changed over time, as well as when various gun laws were passed or repealed. Here's a brief glimpse into the data. In states such as Wisconsin, Delaware, and Minnesota, firearm homicides have risen faster relative to the overall national trend, and firearm suicides have risen faster in states including Alaska, North Dakota, and Montana. The tool also shows that some states have seen reductions in gun violence relative to national averages over the past 4 decades. Wyoming, Idaho, and New York had lower rates of firearm homicides, for instance, and Hawaii, California, and the District of Columbia had lower rates of firearm suicides. This resource was created through the RAND Gun Policy in America initiative, which aims to establish facts that support the development of fair and effective gun policies. to try out this tool and access our many other data-driven resources about gun violence and firearm laws, visit rand.org/gunpolicy.
U.S. Central Command, also known as CENTCOM, oversees military operations in some of the hottest places on the planet. Its region stretches from Egypt through Iraq, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, and into Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Central Asia. How might climate change alter the security environment where CENTCOM operates? That's the question at the heart of a recent RAND research project. Our experts used machine learning to forecast the potential effects of climate change over the next several decades, and then estimated what those effects might mean for violence or unrest across the CENTCOM region. The results show that climate stress will become more intense and more frequent throughout the Middle East and Central Asia. This could mean that CENTCOM will be called upon less to fight wars and more to airdrop humanitarian supplies or evacuate people from disaster zones. CENTCOM should prepare to contribute to more stability operations in the region as well, working to prevent possible climate impacts, such as disputes over water or rare minerals, from tipping into open conflict. Cooperation will be key. CENTCOM will partner with the U.S. State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development, which generally take the lead on humanitarian assistance missions, as well as the UN and NATO, which oversee peacekeeping and stabilization efforts. And finally, CENTCOM should also look for ways to leverage its expertise to help countries weather the changing climate. Overall, it's clear that climate change will affect conflict, but RAND's Karen Sudkamp noted that it could also create opportunities for cooperation. The climate issue could become a, quote, low-stakes arena for countries in the region to come together and talk to each other, she said. Maybe that can reduce the potential for some kinds of conflict, too.
More than 2 years into Russia's war in Ukraine, the once solid wall of U.S. support for aid to Ukraine appears to be showing cracks. Recently, a small number of loud detractors is seeking to sway public opinion by asserting that supporting Ukraine isn't in the U.S. interest. Their arguments are built on the false sense that U.S. influence abroad is divorced from any noticeable consequence for most Americans. But according to Todd D. Walters of the Atlantic Council and RAND's Anne Marie Daly, support to Ukraine isn't just a good deed, it's also a good deal for the U.S. That's because continued assistance to Ukraine is, quote, critical if the United States is to retain its position as the world's indispensable nation and the many benefits Americans enjoy as a result. What's more, supporting a Ukrainian victory over Russia would cost around 5% of the annual U.S. defense budget, and without the cost of American lives. They say that the consequences of the war in Ukraine will echo well beyond Europe. This means that supporting a Ukrainian victory can go a long way toward helping the United States reassert itself at a time when its influence is faltering. Continued U.S. global leadership, in turn, would help shape important international issues such as the governance of space, artificial intelligence, preventing terrorism, and more. Further, if U.S. support for Ukraine continues and Russia is defeated, China may take this as a sign that the U.S. is willing and able to exert its influence around the globe, including, perhaps, in defense of Taiwan. So then, what can be expected to happen if the U.S. doesn't support Ukraine? An emboldened Russia would likely expand its current policy of sowing global discord. Europe would chart a more independent foreign policy and seek to decrease its reliance on the U.S. defense industry and military cooperation. And America's ability to defend its global interests, the same interests that give Americans their extraordinary standard of living, would be diminished by nations that are unwilling to cooperate with an unreliable partner. Walters and Daly see this moment as a golden opportunity to cement the support of U.S. allies and partners, which is America's greatest advantage over Russia and China. failing to support Ukraine now might, quote, kick off an American losing streak that could take decades to overcome.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.